Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting the NFL playoffs, buckle up. Betting football's hard enough as it is. We're doing the research for you. So listen to Cash the Ticket with Mike Valeni and I. We'll be dropping new episodes for every single playoff game. And that's going to be storylines leading into it, so some good football stuff, but also the betting nuggets you're looking for. Sides, totals, trends, player props, throw those in there too. Pre-game and post-game, we're going to be all over the postseason. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Final hour here of a special edition of Sports Talk. We're at the Rouse's Market on Barone Street. Rouse's, of course, the official supermarket of the Saints. Come get your cabbage, your black-eyed peas, fresh Maine lobsters, $15.99 a pound. You save $6 a pound, and they're steamed free while you shop. Bobby, we're going to talk about the NBA question in a second. I just want to mention one thing. Here's one thing. You know, I have to watch a lot of the teams that the Saints are playing from the previous week. So I had to watch Jacksonville and Las Vegas a couple of times, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I just want to tell you one.
I know the
feeling. Yeah. So here's a series. It's second quarter. Raiders have the ball. They're driving at the Jacksonville 41. It's third and six.
Okay.
False start, Las Vegas.
Yep.
So now it's third and 11 at the Jacksonville 46. False start, Las Vegas. Now it's third and 16, back at the Las Vegas 49. Defensive all sides. Mm-hmm. Bloop. Next play. Now it's third and 11, back at the Jacksonville 46. Bloop. Defensive all sides. You are back to where you started. Third and six at the Jacksonville 41. Aiden O'Connell, incomplete punt.
Well, yep.
Four straight penalties. Two false starts, two defensive offsides, and you get back to the same spot.
You're back to square one.
These teams are 3-12.
Well, the thing is, hopefully we don't see that tomorrow. I mean, now think about it. You could have that with the Saints and Raiders.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you shooting yourself in the foot, or
are
you going back and forth?
There were like four straight penalties to get right back where you were and then punted.
Well, you know who's unbelievable, and Mike's been on this from the get-go, him and Charlie Long.
You want to talk about Brock Bowers, a stud.
Oof. Now, led the team, if you look last week against the Jaguars, 11 catches, 99 yards, becoming the second rookie ever. We familiar with Odell Beckham Jr. Becoming the second rookie ever, Odell Beckham Jr. and the third tight end ever, Zach Ertz and Evan Engram, with 10-plus catches in four games in a season. So I guarantee you, they're going to target... No matter who they're playing.
They do, yeah.
He will be targeted. Yes. And so
and they play double tight ends because Mike Mayer is the other guy.
Right. They have five tight ends on their active who play in the game. Yeah. Five.
And you're looking at Brock Bowers. We have to know that from Coach Rhodes, the defensive perspective. Do you know how well he's played on the road? He has 125 receiving yards in two of the past three road games. So I know they throw into him. He's tied for second in the NFL with 101 catches right now, tied with Anquan Boldin for the third most ever by a rookie. Leads the tight ends with – now, this is –
Forget tight ends. Just do everybody.
But wait, but this is a Saints connection. This is a Saints connection. Leads tight ends with 1,067 receiving yards and can surpass The Hall of Famer Mike Ditka, who had in 1961 had 1,076 yards, the most ever by a rookie tight end. He just needs 10 more yards to surpass Mike Ditka.
You know what Mike would tell you? Man, I did it in a lot less games than Bowers. One thing with Mike, he throwed it out, but here's the crazy part. Sam LaPorta set the mark for receptions by a rookie tight end last year. He set the mark. Okay, Bowers has beaten that by over 10 catches. He's 5 catches away from catching more passes in NFL history than any other player. Puka Nacua did it a few years back. He's going to break Puka's mark against the Saints tomorrow. All he needs is 5.
So, the way they target him. Who is that Taysom Hill tight end kind of guy from Penn State?
Tyler Warren. I've been telling you, he's the guy.
So watch next year who's contributing in the NFL.
And you can watch him in the bowl games.
And Mike, you would think that he would be on the level maybe of a Brock Bowers and contribute at that level in the NFL.
And this is a really good year for tight ends and for 2025 draft, and we'll have a lot more time to talk about it, but it's not as good as it was 2 years ago. But when Brock came out, Charlie and I were talking about this, some guy texted me a deal. Mike, if you had to bet every nickel you have on two players to make it, who would you do it? And so I said Jaden Daniels and Brock Bowers. So,
and I think it's happened.
And so he's texted me back during the week. He was like, hey, yeah, you'd have won your money back because of the fact, look what Jaden's done. Look what Brock has done. Now, barring any injury, Brock Bowers is going to be a dominant tight end. The thing that makes him such a great guy, he does not want any spotlight on him. He's no prima donna, none of that. I mean, put it on somebody else. All I want to do is play ball.
Look at the Saints roster and the Raiders roster and if you look at, like two dominant players that is household names in the NFL circles. Now, one of them's hurt, the defensive player.
Max Crosby.
7.5 sacks.
He's
20 pressures. Yeah. His numbers are crazy.
Yeah, Max Crosby and Brock
Trevor
Bowers.
Penning's happy he ain't got to play this week.
Brock Bowers and Max Crosby. If we were going to say who are those Saints players, would you say like an older running back like Alvin Kamara? Who would we say defensively? Who? I don't know who. I mean, in the old days, you might have said Lattimore.
Or Demario Davis.
No, but he's old.
But he's old.
Granderson.
Carl Granderson, but he's
Chase
not.
Chase Young.
I don't know if I'd put him at that Max Crosby level.
Okay, but look at Carl Granderson. He ain't on no damn Max Crosby level, Hoss. We don't have nobody
you
like
asked
that.
Who I would say on this roster.
I don't think we have nobody.
I didn't get to pick people out of the air.
Yeah, we don't have nobody.
And you don't have a receiver as good as Bowers. Don't have anybody in his zip code.
We've won 5 games. The Raiders have won 3. So the NFL, they all know who Max Crosby is and Bowers. Right now, we know the fans know around the league like Alvin Kamara. Our star defensive players, we're old. Honey Badger, DeMario Davis,
Cam
Jordan. And then you look, that used to be a solid point in training camp, the cornerbacks. Now, Paulson and Debo. Are we going to pay Paulson and Debo after that bad broke leg?
But who will? Because of the injury, boy, he's kind of.
They might wait and see.
He's kind of
bad time
in football purgatory.
Bad time to get hurt.
Man, a really bad time.
And especially significant points in the game. I go back to even Green Bay last year. We're up 17-0. Who got the damn penalty?
Isaac Yedem. Isaac Yedem was the one they picked on.
Yeah, yeah. And Isaac,
he was the one they picked on.
Was that the one who got the penalty? But look, the same thing happened this year with Paulson and Debo.
Yeah. They went after him.
Two hands, he panicking and then getting the damn penalty.
He has 3 interceptions. He is still tied
for the
top spot on the team with Tyron, and he hadn't played since week 7.
Yeah.
Now, I say that because, frankly, you know who else should be tied for the top spot? Colin Saunders.
Yeah.
He's had 2. He would have 3 interceptions and be tied for the top spot.
So
how'd you mark that on your card? Was Alante Taylor get a PBU for that?
Pass defense. I said he inadvertently knocked it out.
That was on bloopers. I mean, come on. Saunders knew that. Not only did he bat the ball up, but he...
He was going to catch it.
Yeah. He's an athlete, man. Bank is an athlete.
But no, one of the bloopers, have we not... listen, Spencer Rattler parting the Red Sea on that fumble?
Oh, my goodness.
What? I mean, I don't know. He did like this with his hands, and the ball drops. I guess it slipped out of his hands. I've never seen a play like that, Hoss. I don't know what he's doing. He's trying to maybe escape, and he just, I don't know, parted his hands, and the ball falls. I mean, hopefully that don't happen on Sunday.
I was going to say, it's a big game for that young man tomorrow. He doesn't have his, you know, he's got no Lucas Patrick, got no Eric McCoy. It might be Udo at left guard. You're going to have Landon Young.
It's either Landon Young, or it's going to be one of the two. And now you got, you know, think about Shane Lemieux. He had never played center before in his life. They put him in there in a preseason game to get some snaps just in case. And now all of a sudden, because of Patrick's injury and because of Eric McCoy, hey, kid, get in there. You're the starting center now.
We've had four, right? We had Connor McGovern. We've had a little bit of everybody there. It has been tough.
You might even see Kyle Hurgle in there might have a chance to get some snaps.
Well, they got to bring up, they'll have two practice squad elevations today, and I got to believe it's going to be O-line.
Yeah, because you look at Hurgle, he's played in six games.
So you would think Clyde would stay on the practice squad? Clyde Edwards-Helaire? After what you saw at running back last week?
No, I would like to see that. What's up there? Eddie Compass.
Man. Hey, good seeing you, Eddie.
So I would like to bring up Clyde and bring up one O-line and just kind of roll the dice a little bit. Because at some point, you're going to have to find out, right? So this is a perfect opportunity.
It's a great opportunity for Clyde because I think his issues really didn't center around talent.
Quite frankly, if he's not going to play, you put Derek on IR.
I agree.
If he's going to play, fine. If he's not,
then create that spot.
Create a spot so you can look at Helaire and bring up offensive linemen because you're going to need him tomorrow.
Well, you look at Hurgle, he's played in six games this season between active roster, practice squad, and they might want to see what they have in him the last 2 weeks. If you look at the offensive line and the depth, that could come in about. You know, then you look on the defensive line, he's a sixth-round pick, Christian Boyd, a defensive tackle. You know, they've used John Ridgeway as the run-stuffing defensive tackle instead of Boyd. You know, they traded for Ridgeway from Washington before the start of the season. Remember how I brought up Isaiah Foskey? You went to how disappointing your draft picks? Isaiah Foskey, a second-rounder, has taken fewer snaps, 58 this year, than his rookie campaign when he had 83. He's a core special teams guy where he's played 78.5% of the snaps. He's not even, he's buried. He's not even a rotational pass rusher. When you look, he's played 11 defensive snaps against the Packers. That was the most since October the 2nd that he logged against the Chiefs. So Isaiah Foskey, I don't know. Go out there, Foskey. See what you can do.
Okay, look at his career, and I think he certainly, Zach, played more. Zach Baum, what he's done this year. You talk about right fit, right place, right coach.
Yep.
Vic Fangio targeted him and Devin White. He says, I wanted both of them. Now, it didn't work out with Devin, and he ends up with the Texans after they release him. But look at Zach Bond and his development in Vic Fangio. Bob, you know Vic so well.
He was coaching the outside linebacker. He was like Sidwell coached Von Johnson and Sam Mills. Vic Fangio was in charge of
Going that direction.
And was in charge of Pat Swilling and Ricky Jackson. So Vic Fangio knows the linebackers. He knows who could get it done or not.
And it didn't cost him a lot of money to bring in Zach Bond. Now it will to re-sign him now.
Based
off of what he's done.
Bobby, let's do this. Let's stay on track. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll reset things here. We got about 40 minutes left of our time here at the Rouses on Barone. Take a quick break. A special edition Sports Talk live from the Rouses on Barone. Mike Haas, Bobby Hebert, Mike Dettillier back after this on WBLAMFM.com and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Mike Haas, Mike Dettillier, Bobby Hebert. We are here until straight up noon. Going to take a little college football traveling down that road. Mike, who do we have next?
On our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talk and text line, he works for Pro Football Focus. Dalton Wasserman, who takes care of the college football scene. Dalton, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Appreciate you guys having me on, as always. How are the holidays?
Same to you, Dalton. Dalton, the big story here, certainly Sugar Bowl, Georgia, Notre Dame. I'm old enough, Bob, also Mike Haas. We saw early 80s, Herschel Walker and Georgia going up against Notre Dame. But that is two major programs now. And it was so funny to hear Marcus Freeman talk about, you know, talking about the Sugar Bowl and the build-up. And he's like, yeah, they got a lot of players in the state of Louisiana we might want to take a look at. He was already thinking long ahead of time. But your thoughts on Georgia-Notre Dame, Georgia now with Gunnar Stockton as the starting quarterback due to the injury to Carson Beck. And Notre Dame's defense has really been very good this year. That's Marcus Freeman's wheelhouse. Your thoughts on Georgia-Notre Dame, Sugar Bowl?
I think you mentioned it with that last point. You got two spectacular defenses going at it. Obviously, Georgia's got a ton of talent and Kirby Smart running the show there. And Notre Dame's defense looks better than ever. And I'll tell you, they're amazing in coverage. I think it is going to be a tough task for Gunnar Stockton to put up a lot of numbers in this game. I think you have two teams for different reasons that want to run the football primarily in this game. For Notre Dame, it's because that's just the core of their offense, right? Jeremiah Love is one of the best running backs in the country. Riley Leonard's a very mobile quarterback who can get it done, especially on the edges. And Georgia, with a backup quarterback, and both teams' receiving cores have struggled all year, but with a backup quarterback, it's even more to premium now for Georgia to run the football and not have to throw into the teeth of this Notre Dame secondary that's very good.
Don't one of the things with Georgia, and we've noticed it and talked about it on Sports Talk a lot, man, their receivers, they couldn't catch a cold if they were naked in Russia. I mean, they dropped more passes than any big-time program I've ever seen. Now, they're not going there as a two-star recruits. They're getting four- and five-star guys. And I was a big Carson Beck fan before the season started. I don't want to blame it all on him. He has not played up to expectations. But their receiving core, man, they've been lousy most of the year. I think they have one of the largest drop ratios of passes in all of college football. You wouldn't think that, and I think maybe some of it was masked the last couple years because of they had Ladd was there.
Bowers.
Now he's with the Charger. And Brock Bowers, the tight end. Man, that you can't drop passes in a big game, and that has been a major flaw in the Georgia offense.
Absolutely has. I think, look, at times when their passing game has looked better this year, it's when they've involved the tight ends in the backs. When you talk about Oscar Delp and Lawson Lucky, Cash Jones out of the backfield. But no, their receivers, they have to be better. And I think that's the one thing we've learned with how those two guys you mentioned, McConkie and Bowers, the way that they've excelled in the NFL shows you just how darn good they were and how valuable they were for Georgia. So they definitely need guys to step up in this receiving core in this game because it's not just the drops. They struggle to separate. They've been one of the worst teams in the Power 5 when it comes to separating from man coverage, and that's a huge problem in this game against Notre Dame, who plays a ton of it, and they play it very well. So they have to win their one-on-one matchups and separate first, and then, like you mentioned, they need to catch the football because, again, it's only going to take you so far that you can ride the tight ends in the backs. At some point, you need your wide receivers to make plays. I think that's something for both of these teams, but you mentioned it. Even when Carson Beck was on the field, these receivers were struggling all season.
Now, Dalton, boy, this is old school and tradition. I'm a traditionalist at times, and it kind of aligned in the postseason in the playoffs, college football playoffs. Pac-12 versus Big Ten. Now, Oregon's in the Big Ten now, but Oregon versus Ohio State come New Year's Day in the afternoon. That was to me. I watched that whole game. That was very entertaining. On October the 12th, Oregon ended up winning 32-31. I'm a fan of Coach Lanning and what he's done with the Ducks. And so when I look at the second time around, I can tell you this. If Will Howard plays like he played last week, that to me has been the weak link. And if he has that kind of performance, watch out for Ohio State. But I think the most consistent quarterback out of all of the teams, and that's why he was a Heisman Trophy finalist, Oregon quarterback Dylan Gabriel. He passed for 341 yards, and he ran for a 27-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter of the first meeting. So that's why I don't count out the Ducks, is because of the consistent quarterback play with Dylan Gabriel versus Will Howard. If Will Howard could play like he played against Tennessee, watch out for Ohio State. But Dylan Gabriel, the stability and considering transferring and all that, Well, it looks like he's been in Oregon the whole time, even though they had Bo Nix. Dylan Gabriel, to me, has been the most consistent quarterback out of all the quarterbacks still playing.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And like you mentioned, there's a reason he was a Heisman finalist. And I love the word you mentioned there, stability, right? And I think you could not have gotten a better guy to replace Bo Nix than Dylan Gabriel when he came over from Oklahoma. He gives him such a high floor, right? He completes all the same passes that Nix did last year. He understands the system. It was very easy for him to pick up. He understands when he needs to get the ball in space to his playmakers. I mean, he does. He gives him an extremely high floor. He's got a pretty good offensive line to work with, a loaded group of weapons. And, you know, I think he understands when he can take his chances and when he can't, right? I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is Dylan Gabriel's always been very good at avoiding turnovers and doing the safe thing. And look, there's a value in just completing passes, right? And you talk about completing them at such a high rate that he does, especially with the receivers that he has. You're absolutely right. And then on the point of Will Howard, I think you're right on that too. If he plays like he did last week, we're going to get a barn burner of a game. And honestly, outside of the Michigan game, Will Howard's been spectacular in the second half of the season. The Michigan game, they just couldn't block anybody. The offensive line's a real X factor for Ohio State. But when Howard has time in the pocket to get the ball to weapons like Jeremiah Smith and Emeka Abuka, he's been as good as anybody. I think it's really more about the pass protection than it is about Will Howard's composure in this game.
Giving them receivers for Ohio State.
Yeah, yeah.
What?
You give them
Smith
that.
And Abuka?
Yeah, yeah.
Man,
yeah.
You got something there.
Well, and Dalton, when you look at how the playoffs are structured and you can tweak stuff, to me, you have to reseed. You got to reward a team like Oregon. I mean, shame on Texas if they don't get to the semifinals playing Arizona State. And the same thing with Penn State. You're playing Boise State. You look at Notre Dame and Georgia, and I'm looking at Oregon and Ohio State. Don't you think they have to reseed if they're going to tweak things? And I guess when you ultimately want it to be fair, but look how tough Oregon, would they've been rewarded to actually to get to the finals if they do.
Yeah, I think more than reseeding as we go, kind of like we do in the NFL, I think they're going to look at the initial process of how the highest ranked conference champions got into the top four, namely, like you mentioned, Boise State and Arizona State, who weren't in the top four of the actual rankings, but by virtue of winning their conference, then got their way up there. They might change that part of it because I think the top four, if they had done it just purely off the rankings, would have been Oregon, Texas, Georgia, and Penn State in some order. So, you know, I think it did create for a little bit of imbalance when you talk about, okay, Ohio State-Tennessee was the 8-9 matchup, but in the actual rankings, they were 6-7. It got bumped down by two teams that, you know, that came in from behind them to win their conference. So I think it's more about the initial process that they're going to look at. But, you know, kind of my mindset on this, too, with Oregon is you were probably going to have to beat Ohio State anyway at some point. So, you know, if you have to get it over with. Now, it is rough that they'll probably have to play them and you know, likely Texas. But you never know. Arizona State's been raging hot. They could pull an upset, too. But, no, I think that's something they're going to look at, I think, in the initial selection process about how they do the seeding and the buys, you know, when it first starts.
Dalton, one of the things, LSU playing Baylor. And, man, early in the season, well, midway into the season, I wondered if Dave Aranda was going to survive. At Baylor, they had gotten off to a difficult start, and then all of a sudden his offense catches a fire. Now you wouldn't think that Dave Aranda coach team is noted for their offense, but they played great down the stretch, and especially on the offensive side of the football. Now you're playing an LSU team, they're without their two starting tackles, their top receiver in Kyron Lacy. I think Baylor's got a shot here, a real shot, because of the fact their team is basically intact going up against LSU. LSU's got a lot of pieces of the puzzle that's been pulled away, but it's so funny when Dave was here, how much time he would spend watching offenses. As a defensive coach, you would think that he would spend a lot more time on defense, and he would always tell me, no. He said, Mike, I spend most of my time watching other people's offense, which gives me the most problems, and I want that on my team. I think Baylor here, you know, has a legitimate shot because of the fact with LSU's loss, and LSU's defense ain't nothing great home to write about either. I think both teams are like that, but Baylor's offense, how it's played down the stretch, has really been impressive.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And Aranda, I'll tell you what, any team, and we've seen it from a lot of teams this year in the country, if you find the right quarterback, you can get yourself together a good team, right? And I think Sawyer Robertson for Baylor, he's done that. And I think you mentioned about Dave Aranda trying to find what gives him trouble. And it's a great point that, look, defensive coaches, they need to know offense like the back of the hand because they need to know how to be an attack. And Sawyer Robertson gives them a dual threat at quarterback that they haven't had in the last couple of years, right? They kind of had some pocket passers who were kind of ineffective, but Robertson's given him a dual threat on offense, a guy who's very dangerous on things like quarterback draws and gives them that other dimension. Along with Bryson Washington, they're 1,000-yard back in the backfield. He's got multiple threats in the backfield. Robertson's been throwing the ball well downfield all year long. I think it's really been one of those things that is surprising. They're one of the more surprising teams in the Big 12, in a Big 12 that got turned pretty much completely upside down from what the preseason expectations had, right? And Baylor is in that mix with 8 wins this year. So I think he found players that he knows, hey, we can create some conflict, especially in the run game with Sawyer Robertson and Bryson Washington in the backfield, and then they work from there.
I think, Dalton, I'll get your comments on it. I've talked to John Sumrall at Tulane about it. We've heard from Brian Kelly make the same comments that, man, they got to tweak the rule some kind of way here with this transfer portal stuff. Because now, the way you end the season, you don't even have the same team, even if you're playing in a bowl game. And we know eventually this playoff format will jump from 12 to 16, I think, in the very near future. But they've got to be able to do something to keep players there. And I think I don't know exactly how, because of enrollment and how you're getting them into school in the January time frame, but there's got to be something there done that from a transfer portal situation and to be kind of open to jump from one team to the other. We saw Tulane's quarterback leave and he's going to Duke, and then all of a sudden now Mekhi Hughes, their bell cow runner, he's leaving the program. Your thoughts on how this could be done different in the future with the transfer portal?
So the consensus on the problem seems to be the timing of it, right? And you kind of mentioned it with Baylor and LSU, where there's one team with their team totally depleted between the portal and draft guys, and there's one team with a bunch of guys coming back, and they're playing with what they have all year. I think we've seen that in a lot of these bowl games. I think one idea that I thought was interesting, you know, that was proposed, I forget where I heard it, was maybe you push the whole timeline back. And you mentioned it. It's a problem when it comes to the academic spring semester, and, you know, the college football playoff runs into the beginning of that and trying to get enrolled and get into school and do all of the, you know, quote-unquote student-athlete things, right, that kind of gets thrown by the wayside in this process. But you wonder if they start going to more of an NFL sort of model where you go, okay, everything's on hold until after the national title game. We have the transfer portal in the spring, almost like the free agency period, and then maybe you push spring ball back into a little more into the summer, say, instead of being in, you know, April or early May, we're talking about spring ball being in June, July, and it's really more of a summer ramp-up period, and you just have one window in the spring, whether that's a 4 or 5 week window, something like that, where, okay, then guys that can declare for the portal, finish the semester and get to their new schools in time for the summer, because that seems to really be the issue with spring ball still being during the spring semester when kids are on campus. It throws off the timing of all of it, and there's still the school aspect of it. So I think I do wonder if maybe they find a way to push everything back so you don't have, what is it, 4,000 kids or whatever that transferred the day they were allowed to the second the regular season ended. I think that might just be a thing where they have to change the entire offseason calendar.
Great. Yeah, you change off-season calendar. The difference why you can't, you know, people might say, well, look how the NFL does it. But the NFL don't have to go to school.
School, right.
And correct. When you look at school, when you look at that, I think obviously you got to take that in consideration. This is what I say. I mean, we're paying them now. The hell with school. Just make them an employee. Just like, okay, we're hiring you, and we're going to pay you to play football. And then you can figure out how you're going to go to school. You know, we can pay for that too, but it's not like student-athlete. That's out the way. that's gone per con.
Yeah, I think that kind of has been squashed.
No. And all completely. Of a sudden, then you can have a collective bargaining agreement, and then you can negotiate a salary cap and all that. Because right now, the schools will not win an antitrust, and of course, the NCAA will not win.
They've lost millions and millions of dollars.
So that's why I'm telling you, making these players employees, that might end up happening.
Yeah, we'll see. Dalton, we appreciate your time. Dalton Wasserman, college football NFL contributor, as always. Have a great Saturday. Hope to see you soon.
All right,
Dalton.
Anytime, guys. I appreciate you, as always.
All you right, bet. Got to take a break. Mike Haas, Bobby Hebert, Mike Tillier. We're at the Rouse's down at the CBD on Barone Street for another 20 minutes. So come on down and get all your shopping done. Take a break. WWLAMFM.com. Always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back just for about another 15 minutes here in the show, but come on down anyway. Rouse's open all day to get all of your fixings. Of course, happy and a safe new year to from Donnie Rouse, the entire Rouse's Markets family, Tim Acosta and Marcy Nathan. Happy new year from Rouse's, and do not forget, get ready for the Saints' final home game of the season against Las Vegas tomorrow in Caesars Superdome. Game day starts 8 a.m. First Take with Steve Geller and Jeff Nowak. 10 o'clock, it's the Bud Light countdown to the kickoff with Bobby Hebert inside the dome, Loge Level, Gate B, 200-level atrium, presented by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service. And at noon, Sync Up Deuce and myself, Mike Haas, and then after the game, sound off on the Ciroc Point After with the Cajun Cannon, Saints and the Raiders. Join us for 10 hours of football starting at 8 a.m. tomorrow on WWL and the Odyssey app. And Bobby, Christmas Day, we had football. You know, those four
basketball,
teams. We had those four teams. By the way, Kansas City, think this, played on every day of the week this year.
Except Tuesday. Right, that's unbelievable.
So Christmas Day, they have the same four teams that played on Saturday, played on Wednesday. NBA used to own that day. I don't know anymore.
Yeah, the NBA used to own that day, and that's why any team that makes an excuse that, we're going from Sunday to Thursday and all that, look at the Ravens and the Chiefs. They played three games in 11 days, and they both went undefeated. That shows you how good the Ravens and the Chiefs are. Now, with that being said, on Christmas Day, the NFL ain't going nowhere. They're going to be part of Christmas Day. Oh. Now, the great LeBron James, look, it says, I love the NFL. He said in his post-game interview, but Christmas is our day. Not so fast, LeBron. Not when you get the viewership. No, the NBA, you don't own Christmas anymore. You might have once owned Christmas Day, but you look at Wednesday's doubleheader, that being the NFL on Netflix, set records as the most streamed NFL games in U.S. history, with numbers nearly five times more than the NBA. You look at the Baltimore Ravens, and it was bad games. 31-2 victory over the Texans. It averaged 24.3 million, while the Chiefs, if you look at that, look at the Chiefs win at Pittsburgh, that averaged 24.1 million. So you could say 24 million both games. Now, if you look at those figures, that said there were 65 million U.S. viewers who tuned in for at least 1 minute of the two games. Now, the NBA's five-game slate averaged 5.2 million viewers per game on their platforms, according to the league. So, sorry, LeBron, no in the NBA. The NFL ain't worried about y'all. We're going to play when we want to play. Who knows, Hoss, in the future they might have a night game. And they're going to have a game on Tuesday.
Eventually.
Next year is easy. Christmas is on Thursday.
Yeah.
So we start the cycle over again. Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't know when the next leap year is.
The other thing, too, is I told this to Bob. They're going to have the two games, being kind of late morning, early afternoon, and then the afternoon game. Watch them because of the ratings, a night game, Christmas
without a doubt.
Night.
They're going to add another game.
Because you know what? Who we got to go up against? The NBA? They're not beating us in this.
And instead of two games, they're going to have three.
You can see it. That is going to happen.
And you just look at Netflix. This is just from the United States. I think, if I got this correct, I want to say the Netflix subscribers around the world is like 250 to 300 million or something. So I don't even know what, a casual observer. Oh, let me see this American football game.
You can't do it now. You got to work to get to the game. You got to work to find the game.
Yeah. But that shows you how many people were watching, how powerful the NFL is.
Yep. And the other thing, too, with it is it came in a lot better than the Tyson fight. Man,
so they might have worked on it.
Somebody did something because, man, that Tyson fight, that aggravated me. Trying to get it.
And you know what has gotten better? I think it's gotten the product, Amazon Prime on Thursday night.
Yeah, much better, yes.
Yeah, you look at the pre-post game and all that, not just the game.
And we saw Drew in the pregame for the Netflix.
The NFL, the rich get richer.
Yep,
they're not going anywhere.
Take our final break. break, come back and get the final thoughts of Bobby Hebert and Mike Dettelier ahead of tomorrow's noon kickoff with Las Vegas. Back after this from Rouse's Markets on Barone Street, WWLAMFM.com, and always free on the Odyssey app. Welcome back. Final thoughts here from the Rouse's on Barone Street. Come on down. Get all of your stuff for the football weekend and New Year's. And if you like talking football, how about just listening to football? The triple header next. Chargers at Patriots, followed by Broncos at Bengals, followed by Cardinals at Rams, right here on WWL, AM, and FM. Bobby,
yeah.
Final thoughts, Saints.
Final thoughts, Saints, Raiders.
Raiders.
Saints, they haven't played that much, but it just shows you the parity in the NFL. You know, we're deadlocked 7-7-1. We've only played the Raiders, whether they've been in Oakland, Los Angeles, Las Vegas. We've only played them 15 times. Do you know the very first game in the series was a tie? 21-21 in Tulane Stadium, 1971. So we've not necessarily had the advantage at home. You look at NOLA, we're 4-3-1. So hopefully it's not 4-4-1, deadlocked again. But the one thing I'm looking at, the Saints, throughout the season, have we really stopped the run? No. We've given up right at 5 yards a carry, but I'd be extremely disappointed if Las Vegas can run the ball against us. They are dead last in the league, 32 out of 32. They only average 77 yards rushing a game. So if the Raiders gash us rushing the ball, I'll be extremely disappointed. Come on. At least, oh my God, this would be the game. Hold the Raiders like for 3.8 yards and make the quarterback beat you.
All these games, if you look at it, the past few weeks have been low-scoring games with the Raiders. And I don't think the Saints are going to put up a ton of points either. So you know it's going to come down to what we always talk about, turnovers. Who makes that critical error
turnovers
in the
kicks.
Fourth quarter?
Well, and you talk about turnovers. The Raiders are minus 17.
And they last game, they were plus two.
Oh, how about that? How about that against Jacksonville?
To get to minus 17.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because it was more than that.
And you remember at one time we were plus four. Now we're minus
four. We were plus eight. We were plus eight. Deuce and I were talking yesterday. Happy birthday, Deuce.
Man.
Just watch it tick down. Tick, tick, tick.
And now we're minus one. And think last year, that's blasphemy. We didn't get the 10 wins. We were plus 11 at the end of the season, and we didn't make the postseason. Yep, that's terrible. That's a shame.
And it's crazy how the sacks didn't match either. You didn't get no quarterback sacks last year. This year, you've been better at the quarterback sack situation. But, man,
Mike, we had 8 sacks, then no sacks.
No sacks.
Right now, we only had 37. We always say, you know, to be amongst the best, you've got to be high 40s, low 50s.
So. Thanks to everybody at Rouse's. Know this, that you got a lead going into the fourth quarter. The Raiders have trailed going into the fourth quarter in 14 of their 15 games. You got to get this one. Thanks to everybody at Rouse's. Mike Dettelier, Bobby Hebert, you're the best. Colin Steele in the booth.
Thank you, Colin.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great holiday.
Who that?